Hello, Catherine. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Well, let me introduce you. I don't know whether I need to introduce you because you're very well known in the community among community leaders. And ordinary community. So, I'll just say a little bit about you. Because there's a lot, but I'll say a little bit. Catherine Lynch is a professor of equality studies in UCD, and she has published books and numerous articles on equality and social justice. And her book, Affective Action, Love, Care, Justice, was chosen as one of the 100 best books by Irish Times readers. She's not only known in Ireland, but in Europe, China, and even in Korea. She says, if you want to bring about change, listen to people from outside and not at the table of power. So, Catherine, first of all, could you tell us what is equality studies? I know you started this chair.
Yeah, well, I suppose the whole idea behind it is that you would research all equality issues rather than prioritizing one over the other.
Mm.
That whether it's a gender, social class, poverty, racial divides, disability, age, sexuality, everything that could be and possibly is a site of injustice is something that you should study in higher education, and indeed I would argue in society more generally, because equality is a fundamental principle of democracy. And it's a fundamental principle of all the great kind of UN conventions to which we're signatory in Ireland and elsewhere. And it is a very, very fundamental principle for respecting people and in a way that everybody has an equally good life.
Yes. So in other words, what you're saying is you don't have to be a socialist or a feminist to ask for equality.
No, you don't. And I think those labels of labeling people is actually quite dangerous because people are put into boxes. And then people, you know, we all have cognitive maps. We have maps we associate certain words with, and certain words have negative connotations, maybe wrongly. And so if you put people into a particular box and you say, oh, you're this or you're that, that's intellectually, in fact, journalists do it a lot. Oh, this person is left-wing or they're hard left. That's very dangerous thinking. It's intellectually lazy thinking because people might want a more equal and just society. And there's nothing, you know, reprehensible about that, you know, and labelling somebody is just a way of not engaging with their argument.
Yes, I suppose it's very easy to label so that it's easy for people to have a, you know, to understand people without actually thinking, probably.
Yeah, I think so. And the same is true of feminism. It's another word that has been deliberately, what would I say, used to label people like, and it's just about men and women having the same standing, the same rights, and having equal respect for one another. It's really not any more about one person oppressing another. It's not about that.
It's really about equality as human beings, isn't it?
That's right. Yes absolutely.
Yeah.
And
So what you're saying is equality is central in creating solidarity, care, and support of the community.
But I do think
And that
I think...
And that's the way to create a good household. And that, this is very interesting what you say, that it's about the household and can listen and can then extend it to local community, national, state, and beyond, which is a very interesting idea, I think. Now, could you tell us a little bit about, in a little nutshell, it's difficult, but...
I know, I will. Well, I suppose here in UCD, we developed the idea of affective equality, which was to describe the whole world of care. And the whole idea behind it is that in order to survive, everything from the environment to animals, to creatures, to flowers, to ourselves, we all need to be nurtured. And yet, in a lot of our society, when we talk about justice, and we talk about equality, we don't really think of the needs of people for nurturing and care and protecting their rights to be loved and cared for. I would argue that being cared for and being loved both individually and collectively is and should become a human right. Because, you know, emotionally, it's the bread and roses argument. You can't live without food, but neither can you live without love. And it's a huge resource, and it's something we create in life. Like, people are very fortunate, some people have a lot of nurturing inheritance, both individually and collectively, i.e. through their families, or through their communities, or through the country that they live in. There's a very famous book called The Spirit Level, and it shows that some countries are simply much more caring than others. Our northern European neighbours are much more caring societies. I'm talking at the level of the state now, the nation state, in terms of their welfare provision, the protection of elderly people, the protection of children who are vulnerable, than, we'd say, a very wealthy country, equally wealthy country like the United States. You know, they have far more inequalities, and those economic inequalities translate into care inequalities. So you can't take one without the other. But I suppose if you respond to your question, what I'm saying is, like, that work, the work of actually creating people and human beings and loving and caring for them, is work, of course, that is disproportionately done in families and indeed in a lot of local communities as well by women. And that work is not recognised. It's badly paid, or it's not paid at all. And people claim what is actually work, and is anyone who's got up with a baby during the night or minded your intellectually disabled child that needs to be cared for 24/7, or your, who sometimes can be an adult who you're minding at home with no support very often, or your elderly parent who you have to get up with at night because they're incontinent, or they're, you know, wandering around because they have dementia. All of that is a huge amount of work. And because the people in power tend not to do it, they don't see it.
Yes.
That is a big problem in society.
They make policies, don't they?
Well, they do make policies. And I would argue that this is one of the biggest, into the future, it is one of the biggest issues, because we are, take age, we are an ageing society across Europe.
Yes.
And okay, we have a reasonable birth rate in Ireland, but we also have a massively growing number of people who are not so much older, because I don't want to be ageist about it, I'm older myself, but I mean older in the sense of people with high dependency needs. People, and we live longer, but we also live at the end of our life, if we're fortunate to live long enough, with very high dependency needs. And we haven't really taken that seriously, or the work of it seriously, and it's invisible work that people do at home. I'm sure people listening to you are doing it, and there's very, and you know, you get a pat on the back, but a pat on the back isn't much use to you if you want rest back care, you know.
Yes.
And you need a week off, or you need a rest, or you need somebody to come in at night, and you only get, you know, whatever it is, maybe 15 hours a week, you know, on home health care. Is in fact that there's nobody, most of the public health services don't provide people for you overnight, and if you've no money, you can't afford to pay for it. So it is a very serious matter, both for the person who's doing the work, but also for people who are ill themselves. They want their dignity, they don't want to be a burden on anybody, and they want to be respected. So I think it's a very, very big issue nationally and internationally.
So what you're saying really is that we have to take care of the carers as well.
Absolutely. I think that, I mean, there are organisations that care for carers, but you can't nurture other people unless you're nurtured yourself. That is a fact. And, you know, we know for people who are caring at home that it adversely affects their physical health and their mental health if they're not supported. So it is a very big national issue, and it's an issue, like, there's this whole attempt to turn the care of the elderly, which I feel very, really needs to be analysed and addressed, into a profit-making business. It is unbelievable that we're doing that. The care of people at the most vulnerable time in their lives is being turned over into profit-making. How could a society do that? It would have been unthinkable 50 years ago, even when we were much poorer. But now we seem to think it's no problem that you commercialise it. And, you know, well, hard luck if you need it. And, you know, if you have no money to pay for it, then, well, one of your family will have to do it. And so I think that those are very serious national issues.
I suppose about carers, they do it with love. You talk about love, which is really interesting and unusual for a professor, an academic, to talk about love and care in that way. Now, for instance, would you say it's compassion we need?
Well, I think that, you know, you can love someone, but love is both a pleasure and a burden.
Yes.
And a responsibility.
Yes.
And it has two sides. And anybody who loves your children, very easy to love young, growing children. But that doesn't mean when you have to get up for work in the morning and you're awake half the night because they're sick, that is not work. I think the failure to reckon, to seal and define something or love and care for others as just a matter of nature is a myth.
Mm.
It isn't.
Yes, yes.
You know, it may, of course, we want to look after those we have and who've loved us, and we want to reciprocate it and look after children or neighbours or whoever. But we have to recognise that it takes a huge amount of human effort to do that. Mm. And a lot more, many people will tell you, being on maternity leave in their time, like myself, it's like a holiday coming back to work. Mm. It's much easier work sometimes. You have no child calling for you all the time, or if they're sick or ever, you have time to yourself. Mm. And I think that there's a failure to recognise, because again, I come back to the fact that a lot of the people, and they are, we in this country, disproportionately men in power, in all the departments that make these decisions, they are not the ones who get up at night. They are not the ones who are up, looking after people with 24/7 care. They're not doing it. And because, you know, when you don't do it and experience it every day, you don't feel it. And it doesn't matter as much to you.
I suppose they are deemed as breadwinners, so they don't need
Well, I think that's ridiculous, this distinction between breadwinners and carers. Carers produce the infrastructure of society that makes it possible for other people to make money. And without caring, the world would fall apart. The people who would mind your elderly sick relatives while you were at work. Someone has to do it.
Yes.
You know, the idea that we live at these autonomous person and breadwinners and they're valuable and everybody. There are necessary dependencies in life. Some people are dependent.
Yes.
It's inevitable. When we get very old and vulnerable, we are dependent. When we're sick, we are dependent. And even the powerful and the rich, whoever they are, and more powerful than anything else, in political and other forms of power, they will become vulnerable and they will become dependent too. And I think we have to recognise that rather than pretend that dependency is some kind of dangerous thing. Dependency is endemic to the human condition for all of us when we're babies, and if we're older or if we have severe disabilities at times, it may and make us dependent. I'm not saying everybody with disability is not dependent, of course, but at times we are, all of us.
Now, I mean, as you say, dependency is endemic, right? So, in other words, there are people who depend, but they don't get any. They are the lonely people who have no one to care for.
I think that's a very big issue. Loneliness is an enormous problem. An enormous problem because we don't recognise the emotions of people as being as important as their material condition, their emotional health and well-being. And we don't, if we have, you know, huge commutes to work and people have no time, or people are all migrating into the cities and living then in rural areas with nobody to visit them, that is a huge issue because loneliness is a terrible thing to feel. And, you know, people have no time. Sometimes it isn't that people don't want to go to see people. They simply haven't got time. Their work schedule, the distances, the commutes that they have to work make them so tired or unable to do it. And rather than people then feel ashamed saying they're lonely.
Yes,
but
yes.
Why wouldn't you say you're lonely? There's nothing, you know, some people are. And, you know, we have to create a consciousness in society of how we address that. I'm not saying there's an instant solution, but to name it in public, it's as important as naming any other issues or problems that we have, to name loneliness and to give people the right to speak about it, and maybe to look at what kind of new communities and infrastructures we create in towns and villages and rural areas so that people aren't isolated.
Well, I suppose the thing is that people do their own thing now and they keep to themselves. Keeping to themselves is a little bit Irish, isn't it?
A little bit?
Irish.
I don't know that it is. I mean, I think whether it is or not, I'm not so sure. But I do, I think this is an amusing thing to say to you, but one of the things I often notice when you go to parks, that especially here in Dublin, you'll notice that mostly people who are not Irish, who use them a lot for their children to play, Irish people tend to have their private back gardens. And I just think it is a very interesting phenomenon. We're not used to, or like I often have said a few
times,
give an example, people have beautiful flowers on the altar for their relatives, but outside there was nothing. You know what I mean?
Yes.
We don't have a sense of respect for the communal spaces and for living and respecting the public sphere. I do think that is an issue. People drop litter and all that kind of thing. No, I'm not saying, of course, they're lovely tidy towns and everything in Ireland. I don't want to be totally negative about it. But I am saying that maybe we need to live a little more collectively and have more community events, especially so that people who are not don't necessarily have families, and not everybody has a family who can support them, you know.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. That's circumstances of life for people. So there are social places they can go to and places they can meet that aren't pubs, if I may say so.
I suppose it's to do with the weather as well, isn't it, Catherine?
Yeah, but if you look at indoor places to play for children, take that. Indoors, or indoor places for people to go, you know, we really don't have many of those that are not commercial.
Mm.
You know, there
yes,
was
you
one
have to
time,
pay for
I don't
them.
Know. Mm. Yeah, we have to pay for everything that is extracurricular, as it were. And that applies, like, if you, most of those areas that you go for indoor activities for children, they're all places you have to pay for. In other mainland European countries, you have a lot of things like you'll have public pools, but you'll also have a load of other indoor activities. And our climate is one that certainly would do with a lot more indoor activity and place for people to go for coffee or maybe community cafes and things for adults. That, you know, don't necessarily, as I said, we have playgrounds even for children. I mean, it never ceases to amaze me. You'll go to towns around Ireland or even near where I live, I don't want to go into it myself, you know, we don't even have a playground for children, you know.
Mm.
And down the road there will be a golf course.
Yes.
You know, but there's no playground. So, and or there will be a private tennis club or a private club for something else, but nothing where we can go communally. It's almost like people are ashamed to use the communal spaces because it indicates they don't have private spaces.
Yes.
But that's a very, you know, it's a questionable way to be. And like there's a lot to be said for sharing common experience, whether it's tidying up the street or the road for the putting a few flowers for the tidy towns or whatever it is. There's a lot to be said for that kind of community sharing.
I think the communal spaces are seen as a little bit impoverished. Like, you know, if you use those spaces, that means you don't have, you know, you don't have the money to pay for.
Yes, but I mean, that's the cultural, you know, system that we have created. It
may
not be like that. We can create nice parks, we can play, and we have, like, a lot of around
places there are beautiful parks,
now have lovely parks for children, places to go, and they really matter to people. What I'm saying is, given the climate we had, and especially rural transport is an enormous issue, of course, for older people and isolated people who have no cars in rural areas. I do not know how they survive, because nobody seems to take account of it seriously. It's almost like, oh, they don't have enough voting power, so we don't care about the vote in, you know, West Clare or Roscommon, because they don't matter, you know.
Yes.
And I think that that is a dreadful attitude in a democracy, and it reflects, you know, oh, they can kind of fend for themselves. But, you know, is that the way to have a society? Is that the way to kind of create care for community? I don't think so.
So, Catherine, you've gone around the world, I think. I mean, I said that, you know, you were in China and Korea, is it?
Yeah. Well, I haven't been there, but they've translated my work into Korean, yes.
Yes. So, what would you say about those societies?
Well, I wouldn't say I've studied them, so I'm very wary of saying something like some countries. I don't speak about them in general if I haven't studied them, you know. But I work a lot with mainland Europe, 12 European countries at the moment.
Yes.
And I suppose I would see in the mainland, I'm not talking about the UK because it's a bit of an outlier, but the other countries, a very strong sense of, like, public libraries, public places, indoor places where children can go and where adults can go to meet and where social places. I was struck there during the summer. We went to visit, I won't say where because I want to blame the people, but we went to visit this small town. It was supposed to have this library and history and everything. And we went there. There wasn't even a place to go to have a cup of tea. You know, you couldn't, I mean, you know, social events are so important for people to meet. And it doesn't have to be a very expensive place or very, and I think if the place is kept nice, I feel, you know, that's very important that we respect. I always say to our students here or to other academics, we work in the public interest. We are public service in the university.
Mm.
I should say I'm in the School of Education. I think I feel very strongly about it here in UCD. We are educators. We are here to serve the public. And I think many people who are public servants like myself and maybe civil servants, we forget the importance of that, the importance of keeping the public safe and beautiful for people so that they can enjoy it communally and get to know one another and not feel that you have to own a big back garden or a big house or whatever it is in order to have, you know, a community or a social life.
So, for instance, you're talking about education, children. The children actually in this in Ireland, you have to pay for everything. For instance, if you want to learn music, you have to go to music schools, which is very expensive. They're not provided necessarily in schools. Some schools do, though. They try their best, but it needs funding, I suppose. extracurricular activities?
I think it is, you know, we have a kind of a semi-private attitude to public education, you know, kind of if you can voluntary contribution and pay for it yourself. And I feel, you know, we really haven't, you know, we, to have decent public services, we have to pay for them. We have to pay taxes. No use pretending otherwise. That's how society runs and reasonable democracy runs, you know. And I do think that that is a very big, and music is a very good example to take, because it's extremely discriminatory in social class terms, because 40% of the grade in the Leaving Cert and the Junior Cert is given to performance. And yes, there are students who do a great job. But if you can't afford to get private lessons, it's extremely difficult to do well. And I mean, that is self-evident, and we have known it for years. The same applies to the Irish language, that nobody speaks about as how discriminatory it is. You know, if 40% of the grade now in the Leaving Cert is given to Oral Irish, if you do not cannot afford to go to the Gaeltacht, then I can tell you, because I've just written a paper around this, it costs €950 for 3 weeks in the Gaeltacht for one child in a given year. If you can't afford that extra boost for your children, or you happen to be in a girls' school, that's fine, maybe. But for others, how are you supposed to do well in what is a core subject for your Leaving Cert examination? So there's a lot of what I call privatised education, and we won't even go there. Primary school, the cost of it, sending children back to school, you know, textbook. I cannot believe there isn't regulation of books in school, because every year all these new books are brought out, versions of a biology book or a chemistry book, and the book, often there's marginal difference, but parents have to go and buy a new one, that they've just bought one already, or whether they should have to buy them is another matter. But I'm just saying, there seems to be no concept of making sure that free education is really free. That's another big issue altogether, of course.
Catherine,
I can't go into detail now.
Catherine, thank you. Thank you so much. It's an ocean of wisdom, and there's a lot of food for thought. And thank you so much. And you've opened up huge amounts, a vast area of knowledge.
Yes. It's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.